Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is not in the power of a small group of men, violent, ruthless men, who have always, however, to cast their eyes back over their shoulders. It is not in their power to cramp and fetter the forward march of human destiny. The preponderant world forces are upon our side. They have but to be combined to be obeyed. We must arm. Britain must arm. America must arm.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times filling in for the living legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. This was, you just heard Winston Churchill in 1938 warning Europe, warning England, warning America of the coming Nazi threat. And yet, sadly, the world would fall on deaf ears. They would deliberately ignore Churchill, and the result was World War II, 50 million dead, and a Holocaust. My friends, I want to thank all of you for showing up today and listening to the Savage Nation. And in particular, I want to thank Michael for this wonderful, wonderful opportunity once again to fill in his shoes. Michael, you truly are a living legend. You are the intellectual heavyweight champion of talk radio. And in particular, your struggle to get yourself off the blacklist in Britain, your struggle to have that ban removed, is one of the seminal struggles of our time. Because at its core, your fight is America's fight. Your fight is the fight of all conservatives. You are now fighting for freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of the press. And just as Churchill warned about the coming anarchy, warned about the coming destruction, you have been at the front lines, warning about the coming gathering storm of radical Islam. And for that crime, I believe you were put on Britain's blacklist. For that crime of exposing the jihadists within our midst, for exposing the cowardice of our liberal politicians and our liberal elites, to stand up and defend our national sovereignty and our national security. For that crime, the British government, led by Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister, has now put a target on your back and literally has put your life at very risk by putting you alongside known terrorists, leaders of Hamas, people who have bashed in the skulls of women and children, and known neo-Nazi Ku Klux Klan members and Russian skinheads who have murdered immigrants in cold blood. They have now put an open invitation for any nutcase to come after you and your family. And in the face of this intimidation, in the face of this attempt to silence you, as Churchill warned, if we do not stand up for freedom of speech, we will lose all our other freedoms. And this is why I am looking forward to your book, Banned in Britain, which I now understand has gone to print and should be out in the next couple of weeks. Of all of your books, I believe this one may be even the most important you have ever written. Because what is at stake here, my friends, is not just a conservative talk show host. It's not just the opinions of one man. It is about the most fundamental human right that we have in this society. And that is to be free. That is to have freedom of conscience, freedom of expression, freedom of speech. It is that very freedom that has not only inspired the world since America's Great Revolution in 1776, but it is that freedom that has brought down dictatorships and tyrants. Free speech and the power of ideas has changed the world since the beginning of human history. And as Churchill himself said, it is the power of free thought, it is the power of freedom of expression that is the greatest threat to dictatorships everywhere. Here is Churchill again in 1938, warning his fellow citizens about the dangers of Nazism and the importance of freedom of speech. Boys, roll clip
you
three.
You see these dictators on their pedestal, surrounded by the bayonets of their soldiers and the truncheons of their police. They are afraid of words and thoughts. Words spoken abroad, thoughts stirring at home. All the more powerful because forbidden. These terrify them. A little mouse, a little tiny mouse of thought appears in the room. And even the mightiest potentates are thrown into panic. They make frantic efforts to bar out thoughts and words. They're afraid of the workings of the human mind. A state of society where men may not speak their minds.
There was the great Winston Churchill, a society where people are afraid to speak their mind. This is the ghastly future that awaits for us unless we stand up for freedom of speech and demand that somebody like Michael Savage be taken off that ban. Stop this ban. And that's why I urge all of you, go to michaelsavage.com, sign the petition that will be presented to our members of Congress, where we will insist to the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, and to the State Department that they go and put pressure on Gordon Brown's government to demand that this ban be repealed and overturned. This, to me, is one of the seminal issues of our time. And yet, in the face of this glaring assault on freedom of speech, our mainstream media has been silent. They have been complicit. And their cowardice, compare the cowardice of the media, compare the cowardice of our leaders like Barack Obama or Gordon Brown to the cowardice of Jackie Smith, the Home Secretary, the former Home Secretary. Compare those cowards to somebody like Michael or somebody like Churchill or somebody like Reagan or so many people that have spoken truth to power, regardless of the consequences. Because in the end, it is principle that is more important than power. But sadly, and I have to say this tragically, if you look at our leaders today, look at Gordon Brown in England. Just recently, he has announced that he is pushing forward with his own unilateral disarmament of Britain's nuclear weapons. He has now demanded that instead of three nuclear Trident submarines be built, instead of four, he wants three. He is cutting back on the number of Trident nuclear submarines in an attempt to unilaterally disarm. We have our celebrity in chief, Barack Hussein Obama, recently go to the United Nations, and to the astonishment of even our allies like France, Barack Hussein Obama said, "I dream of a world without nuclear weapons. I am now going to lead the way by starting to disarm our nuclear warheads." In that face of his fantasy, the Iranian dictator Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, that apocalyptic mullah, is now amassing a nuclear arsenal as we speak. Just as Hitler was amassing his armies of destruction and death throughout the 1930s. And just as Neville Chamberlain went to Adolf Hitler and extended his hand and asked Hitler to, quote, unclench his fist, just as Obama has asked Ahmadinejad to unclench his fist, Hitler took Chamberlain for a ride. He used it to give him political cover to wage his war of aggression. Just today, we have this sick, comical spectacle of our diplomats meeting with Iranian top nuclear negotiators in Geneva, Switzerland, where what have they agreed to? Nothing except more talks. The mullahs are laughing at us. They now see an America that has been broken and weakened on the world stage. We are not led by a true commander-in-chief with genuine bravery, courage, and principle. We are led by a man who is a phony. He is a coward. He is a socialist internationalist who is now selling American national interests right down the river. And unlike Churchill, who had the guts to stand up against totalitarianism and against fascism, regardless of his political cost, regardless of the fact that he was hated and ridiculed. In fact, here's something many of you may not know about. Churchill was the most least popular politician in Britain by the 1930s. By 1937-38, when you hear those clips, Churchill was the most reviled man in England. In fact, he would regularly meet people on the streets, and they would say, literally, there are stories recounted, "Mr. Churchill, if I was your wife, I would put arsenic in your tea." And he would respond, "Madam, if you were my wife, I would most certainly drink it." And that is the kind of tenacity that Churchill had. He didn't care what was popular. He didn't care what was the chic, fashionable thing to do, because the fashionable thing to do then, according to the liberal elites of his time, was to appease Hitler, was to negotiate with Hitler. Just as Obama is now doing the fashionable thing by bowing to the Iranian mullahs, give peace a chance, by pursuing this peace at any cost diplomacy, Obama is guaranteeing one thing and one thing only, just as Chamberlain guaranteed one thing and one thing only, and that is war. War is going to come to the Middle East. The mullahs are on the march. They are 6 to 9 months away from a nuclear bomb. And the question that now faces us is the most seminal question that people can face. Are we now willing to stand up and stare down these Nazi Persian dictators as Churchill stared down the German Nazi dictators? If we have that courage, I believe we can save Western civilization and the entire world as we know it. But if we flinch, if we lack the stomach, if we lack the backbone, then we will have a nuclear holocaust in the Middle East, believe me, my friends, that will make World War II look like a Sunday school picnic. This is why, when you have somebody like Michael, who is standing up against the Islamist lobby, when he is standing up against politically correct liberals, believe me, once they come after Savage, they're going to come after the other talk show hosts. They are out to silence dissent. They are out to silence principal conservative spokespeople. They are out to literally help pave the way for the end of Western civilization as we know it. And that's why we shall say no. And we shall fight them and fight them with every fiber in our being. Because in the end, we are right and they are wrong. Do you think Iran is now marching towards a nuclear bomb? Do you think that Obama's policy of negotiations with Iran is the right thing for the United States? Should we give diplomacy a chance? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Kuhner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. Savage. This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Is diplomacy the answer with Iran? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Ron in Florida. Ron, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, thank you very much. I've got a point to make about the appeasement by Neville Chamberlain in 1938 when he came back from Munich.
Go ahead, shoot.
There's been a lot that's been said about this gentleman, that he came back and it was a failed appeasement policy, but you had to give it a shot in the beginning. Now, that might be correct, that appeasement failed, but you've got to remember that there was one country that stepped in 1939 to attack Nazi Germany, and that was Britain. And Britain went in alone without any help. You know, now, they tried appeasement first, it failed, and then they went in. So you have to try appeasement with Iran first before you...
Ron, look, Ron, this is where you and I have a very profound disagreement, and I think we're not learning the lessons of history. If you look at what Chamberlain did, even according to Goebbels himself, who was Hitler's chief advisor and the minister of propaganda for Nazi Germany. He said by seducing the Brits to agree to appeasement, he has given us the time that we need to build up our weapons to unleash our war upon Europe. In other words, the Nazis laughed at Chamberlain. They thought he was an absolute naive fool. And so what Chamberlain did in those crucial 18 months leading up to 1939, as Churchill warned repeatedly, when we sold out the Sudetenland at Munich in 1938, that gave Hitler the path to dominate Europe. And this is what we are doing today. By having those negotiations today and allowing for more further talks, what are they going to talk about with this guy, Ahmadinejad? I mean, you want to talk about what? You want to talk about a Turkish coffee? You want to talk about baklava? You like baklava? I give you baklava. All the baklava and the Iranian women you want. I have harems to give you. What is there to discuss here? He has said repeatedly, our right to nuclear power is non-negotiable. I will wipe Israel off the map. It is a rotten, stinking Zionist regime. Its time is coming to an end. This means one thing and one thing only, a nuclear holocaust. Because the Jews this time, mark my words, Ron, maybe they went quietly into the gas ovens in World War II, but this time they are not going quietly into the gas ovens. Every Israeli military and intelligence official I've spoken to has said to me, Israel will fight, and we will fight to the death if we have to. And if this is going to be our end, our doom as a people, we will go down fighting, but we will not commit existential suicide. The Jews now are willing to stand up to Iran no matter what the costs. So Obama's choice is very simple. Either you sanction an attack now, or you allow the mullahs to wage a nuclear holocaust in the future. It's that simple. This is Jeff Kuhner, filling in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the radio heavyweight champion of the world, Michael Savage, on The Savage Nation. We are talking about Iran and whether the United States should bomb Iran or sanction an Israeli attack. Negotiations went on today in Geneva, Switzerland. I guess the only thing they agreed to was to talk some more. Are negotiations futile? I want to hear from you, 1-800-449-8255. You know, my friends, when I think about the Middle East, I am often reminded of the situation in the 1930s. And to me, the parallels between both periods, then and today, are stunning. You have America in a profound economic crisis. The country is led by a leftist socialist president who has no clue how to deal with our domestic ills and our crumbling economy. He is trying to expand government at a breathtaking pace to bring about socialism at home. Our liberties are slowly being curbed and violated, and our enemies have become emboldened. In the 1930s, it was Stalin's Russia and Hitler's Germany that were on the march. Today, it is Putin's Russia and Iran's Ahmadinejad. Iran is now on the march. And as they are now slowly tightening their grip over not only their country, but Syria, Hamas, Hezbollah, as they are now embarked upon a nuclear weapons program to start a war in the Middle East, our president, our celebrity in chief, living in his literally fantasy world, went to the United Nations and called for a world without nuclear weapons. And this, I swear to you, on my mother's grave, I never imagined in my life that I would see a French president, Nicolas Sarkozy, the French. These are the people that surrendered to the Nazis without barely firing a shot. These are the same people that stabbed us in the back in the lead up to the Iraq War when they told Colin Powell that they were going to support the war and then went on the air and said, we oppose the war. Those cowardly French are in fact now coming up at the UN, and they said, Mr. President, it is time to draw a line in the sand. And as Sarkozy told Barack Obama to his face in public, Mr. President, we live in the real world. We don't live in a virtual world. And this, my friends, is my big concern. Obama has become so detached from reality. He now believes so much in his greatness. He has become such an egomaniac. He is like a Roman emperor who has lost all contact with reality. And as the crowds adore him, as the liberal media fawn all over him, and as his supporters tell him, he is the Messiah, he has come to cleanse our sins, the world is laughing at him, led chiefly by Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. And just as Hitler laughed at Chamberlain, Ahmadinejad is now preparing his army of hate. And Israel has been warning us, we may have another year tops. What are we waiting for? That to me is the question. Let's go to Cliff in New York. Cliff, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I believe negotiations are the way to go with Ahmadinejad.
Why?
And I'll tell you why. Our military has been stretched over 7 years in a war without end. And I don't think militarily right now we're in a position to bomb or attack Iran. They may have numerous nuclear preparation sites around their country. So are we prepared to bomb the whole country?
Well, Cliff, look, I can answer your question in a nutshell. First of all, I have to be very frank with you. I share the concern about the stress on our troops. One of the things I'm privileged here, being a journalist in Washington and a columnist at the Times, is I get to meet people in our military community day after day. Never before have so few people done so much on behalf of so many. And this is what we've been asking of our troops for the last 7 years. They have heroically fought the war in Iraq, and they are heroically have been fighting in Afghanistan. But the problem is this. I believe that our military is now battle-hardened. Our troops have had 7 years of very demanding combat experience. We have shown that we can win in Iraq. We have shown that if our political leaders do not tie the hands of our military, we can win in Afghanistan. But this is the problem, Cliff, and there's no getting around it. Obama is slowly dismantling our national security. As we speak, he is prematurely withdrawing our troops from Iraq, leading to potentially a historic defeat. Now we have sent in another 20,000 American troops just in March that he personally ordered. And in front of everybody, the whole world, over the last couple of weeks, he is now publicly questioning his own counterinsurgency strategy. So my question is this. 43 Americans have just died in the last month. What have they died for? What a way to throw away, to waste precious American blood, the cream of our youth, these wonderful men and women who are fighting for our very freedoms against those animals, against these people that butchered 3,000 Americans on September 11th and that are willing to do 10, 20, 50, 100 times worse if they have the means. And rather than defending them, what have we been doing? We have given them impossible rules of engagement. We have tied their hands behind their back. We are not... This is not Jeff Kooner spouting from a radio studio in Washington, D.C. These are what all the troops have told me to a man and a woman. They said, Jeff, we can win this war, damn it. But you got to stop tying our hands behind our backs. You have to tell the leaders in Washington, turn us loose. Unleash the dogs of war. Let's bomb these people into submission because our men and women are dying there in the hills and caves of Afghanistan. This is an enemy that brought down the Soviet Red Army. This is, you know, these guys are maybe a bunch of primitive cavemen, but they are expert at guerrilla war, and they are bleeding us to death there. And our political leadership, just as in Vietnam, is literally knifing us in the back. They are betraying us. So my policy in Afghanistan is a simple one. Fish or cut bait. Either you get serious and we bring this war to a close, or you pull the troops out and you hit them with airstrikes and drone attacks. But you don't do this. You don't leave them in a massive death trap. and allow them to be killed day after day while our commander-in-chief, hey, he's got time to go on David Letterman. He's got time to go and the All-Star Game. He's got time to go and fight for the Olympics in Copenhagen. But he could only see General McChrystal, our commander in Afghanistan, once in the last 70 days. He's got time to run around with the Hollywood elite and hobnob where they tell him how sexy he is and his cut pecs. And oh my God, you're the greatest thing since Abraham Lincoln. But he doesn't have time to talk to our commander while our boys are dying in Afghanistan day after day. So Cliff, don't tell me we can't attack Iran. We can destroy any country on this planet. And we should tell the mullahs straight out, you are facing the United States of America. We bombed Japan and Germany into submission. And with our air power, we will smash every nuclear facility. We will bomb you back into the Stone Age. And your own people are against you. We saw them in the streets of Tehran the last couple months. We will urge people to rise up and topple your regime. Your days are numbered. But no, not according to our celebrity in chief. No, he's too busy running around in Copenhagen. He's too busy running around in Hollywood. That's the problem in D.C. Let's go to Jeff in San Francisco. Jeff, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Jeff, can you hear me? I can hear you pretty good. Hey, you know, what I'd like to address is the why we're here right now in the first place. Why are we at this critical stage in the Middle East? And I blame Jimmy Carter for everything that's happened since his administration failed to back the Shah of Iran.
You're brilliant, Jeff. Jeff, you've hit the nail right on the head. You absolutely hit the nail right on the head. All of this stemmed from Carter's presidency. He was the one that pulled the plug on our support for the Shah of Iran. And he then brought to power these Islamic fanatical extremist thugs. These people who burned the American flag have committed terrorist atrocities on Americans for the last three decades. You know, Jeff, you have to remember this. Everybody in the Savage Nation has to remember this. Iran is already at war with us. They have been backing insurgency groups in Iraq for the last 5-6 years. These groups have killed and maimed American soldiers. They have American blood on their hands. We're not just talking with a bunch of crazy mullahs. We're talking about fanatical killers. And Carter is to blame because by pulling the plug on the Shah, he brought these people into power. And we are now living with his legacy. But look, what do you expect from that bumpkin cracker peanut farmer? I mean, think of the mind of this guy. He wrecked the country while he was president. Any man with any face or shame would have walked away. What does he do? He runs around. He's building houses. He goes around from community to community. He's building houses with his hammer. Honestly, I think he's been in the sun too long. I think all that sunstroke has infected his brain. And now he comes out. This is the same Jimmy Carter who has the gall to come out and say that the opposition to Barack Obama's plan for government-run healthcare is racist. This is what he said. And now he's backpedaling because everyone he says, well, hold on. If you're opposed to nationalized medicine, somehow you're a racist? What the hell is that? It is gutter politics. And now this country bumpkin, this moron peanut farmer, is now backtracking. Boys, let's roll the tape.
I think an overwhelming portion of the intensely demonstrated animosity toward President Barack Obama is based on the fact that he is a black man, that he's African-American.
You made some remarks recently about how you felt about the protesters that were protesting against President Obama. You said overall you thought the protesters were upset that there was a black president, that there was racism involved. You said that many people...
By the way, that's not what I said.
Okay.
I said those on the fringe element that had vituperative personal attacks on President Obama, those were the ones that I included. Right.
Well, there you go. I mean, he's blatantly contradicting himself, but not in Carter land. You can say the overwhelming proportion are racist. No, it was a fringe element. He's a liar. Jimmy Carter is a liar. Go back to Georgia, Jimmy. Go plant some peanuts. I don't know, do something. Go whack some more houses. Go build some more houses. This guy has become a national embarrassment. And instead of asking for our forgiveness for the horrors that he unleashed upon the American people. He was the one that allowed the Soviets to invade Afghanistan. That's why the Mujahideen eventually came to power. He's the one that allowed the mullahs to take over in Iran. This is everything now that we have to live with. No, this guy's running around smearing and slandering good, honest, decent Americans who are saying one very simple thing. Don't take away my health care. Don't wreck the greatest health care system in the history of the world. And the bigot that he is, because he is a bigot, he's a self-hating Southerner, he always has been, the bigot that he is, no, it's white racism. It's white racism. You know what? At least have the courage of your convictions, you coward. At least that. At least say, you know what? I am a self-hating Southerner. I am a country bumpkin. I am somebody with nothing between the ears. And you know what? I do hate myself, and I hate all white Southerners. So we're all racist. At least say that. But don't backpedal. That's the kind of guy Jimmy Carter is. We'll be right back after this break. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Racism incarnation still exists. And I think it's bubbled up to the surface because of a belief among many white people, not just in the South but around the country, that African Americans are not qualified to lead this great country. It's an abominable circumstance and grieves me and concerns me very deeply.
This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Well, it concerns him very seriously. This really troubles Jimmy Carter. A lot of white people are very racist out there, and they don't want to see an African American succeed. This is the kind of pathetic race baiting, the kind of pathetic smearing and lying that is routinely peddled by liberal Democrats in Washington and across this country. Look, Jimmy, if you didn't get the memo, let me repeat it to you. When Obama became president, nearly 70% of Americans, including a majority of white Americans, since you have to look at everything through the prism of race, wanted this man to succeed. Now, the only person who has brought down his poll numbers is himself, for one simple reason. He is making a mess of things. Nobody gives a damn about Obama's color of his skin. We care about the color of his politics, and it is socialist red. That is the problem. And the American people are now saying enough is enough. Can you get that through your mind, stupid? Can you understand that, Jimmy the Bumpkin? Why don't you go back to Georgia? Do all of us a favor. Seriously. Go, I don't know, plant some peanuts or something. You like the hammer, you like nails. Go build another house, Jimmy. Do us a favor. Let's go to Tony in Indiana. Tony, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate you taking my call. I'm a Southerner. I'm born and raised in Georgia, about 100 miles north of Jimmy Carter. And Mr. Carter...
My condolences, Tony. I'm sorry for you, my friend.
You know, honestly, I can say to one Southerner, if I was looking him face to face, I would tell him... He needs to stay in Georgia, work on his peanut farm or whatever. This racist thing, that is a cover-up to try to push his health care through. And Mr. Carter, to be honest with you, he needs to go back to Georgia and stay there. Jeff, I have a boy. It's in the Army. He's pulled one tour in Iraq. He'll be leaving probably next year. They're talking about sending him to Afghanistan. You know, this is the president, Jeff, that said that what we need to do is major on Afghanistan. He doesn't want to do anything. He's sending our boys over there when he gets ready to. The general's already asked for more troops and stuff. It's just like he's playing around. He's got time to run here and run there. All he's doing is campaigning for this health care that nobody don't want.
Exactly. You nailed it, Tony. You absolutely nailed it. Look, the whole thing is a crock. This whole idea of racism is just a whip that liberals try to use to browbeat and intimidate their opponents. I don't even think Jimmy Carter, deep down in his heart of hearts, even really truly believes that. But look, Jimmy Carter is a self-hating Southerner. And I hate to say this, but there are many Southerners out there who are becoming like Jimmy Carter. They truly believe in the liberal mantra that all there was to the South is racism and Jim Crow. Now, of course, yes, there was. Slavery was an abomination. Jim Crow was an abomination. But there was a lot of other good things about the South. And Tony, you mentioned it. One of it is the proud military tradition that the South has. Disproportionate members of our military come from the South. They are the ones, many of them, who send their sons and daughters off to die to fight in our wars. Jimmy Carter is a coward. Jimmy Carter will stand there and destroy people's reputations and smear them and go down to the Palestinian territories. Oh, he'll run off to Gaza and the West Bank today, tomorrow, yesterday. He'll go there and cozy up with Yasser Arafat, the late dead dictator, or he'll run off with Hamas and tell them how the Palestinians are oppressed, that Israel is committing apartheid and genocide against the Palestinians. When it comes down to Jew baiting, when it comes down to hating Israel, when it comes down to peddling anti-Semitism, there's Jimmy. You can always count on Jimmy. He hates Israel and he hates the South. That's Jimmy in a nutshell. So really, in a sense, Jimmy Carter is the walking caricature of your cracker Southerner. You want to talk about a guy who's got nothing between the ears and is a real hater, although he may not hate blacks, but he certainly hates Jews, that's Jimmy Carter. And frankly, Tony, I am getting really disgusted at all of this Southern bashing that's been going on. You've been hearing it now for decades. You know what? I'm really getting tired of it. Southerners raise their families, they're good people, they love their country, and they need our support. I'm tired of it. And people like you should stand up. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on The Savage Nation.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times filling in for the living legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael is off today taking some much needed R&R, but he'll be back tomorrow, guns blazing, ready to go. Michael, if you're listening out there, my friend, thank you so much once again for the opportunity to fill in for you. You truly are not just a brilliant talk show host, but a very, very generous man. And I want you to know it is always an honor of mine to sit and try to fill your giant shoes and obviously to talk to your wonderful listeners out there in the Savage Nation, which to me are the backbone, the heart and soul of this country. My friends, America is no longer a superpower. What you have now seen over the last week and a half is the end of the American moment. Since the end of World War II, it has been America that has led the fight for the free world. It is America that brought Soviet communism to its knees. It is America that has been looked upon as a source of inspiration all across the world, a beacon of liberty and freedom and human rights for oppressed peoples everywhere. And now, under this charlatan of a president, under this celebrity in chief, who is now so drunk with power, so drunk with hubris, he is now literally like a Roman emperor giving away the store. And as this man gets serenaded by the liberal media, and as the Hollywood elite chant his name, and as he meets with the Europeans in Copenhagen to try to push for the International Olympic Committee to grant the Olympics to Chicago, and they tell him what a great man he is. Rome and America are burning. America now is facing severe problems, both internally and externally. We are now no longer the world's most dominant power because of the policies of President Obama. Russia is now resurgent. We have now given up our sphere of influence in Eastern Europe. We have now abandoned the Poles and the Czechs by pulling out our missile defense shield. Communist China, which today just celebrated its 60th anniversary, is now parading its troops and its missiles and its weapons on the streets of Beijing. They are now the rising military power. They threaten Taiwan. They threaten Vietnam. They threaten South Korea. They threaten Japan. And as one dissident told me in a one-on-one interview, he said, "Jeff, you Americans don't understand something. You are an impatient people. You think only for today. You think in profit margins for the next quarter. The Chinese communists are patient. They think in 50 to 100 years. And they have a strategy. They have a plan to knock the United States off. They now see themselves as the rising superpower. But most importantly, we are now losing everything we have built in the Middle East. We are losing the war in Iraq because Obama is pulling out our troops prematurely. We have now abandoned our troops in Afghanistan, leaving them to die at the hands of the Taliban, while our president walks around gallivanting, doing his little late-night comedy routine on David Letterman, and giving interviews to all of his sycophantic liberal friends on the Sunday talk shows. We are slowly losing everything in the Middle East. And as this is going on, he is like a drunken emperor. And let me tell you something, my friends in the Savage Nation. This is an exclusive for the Savage Nation. French officials, senior French officials close to President Nicolas Sarkozy, have confirmed to me that at the meeting last week at the UN Security Council, which Obama chaired, the French could not believe the state that Obama has degenerated into. Privately, they believe and they say two things about him: that he has now become such a radical leftist that he has now become detached from reality. And more than that, that his ego has grown so huge, he has now become a megalomaniac. He will not tolerate criticism. He cannot hear criticism. As one French official said, he's starting to believe his own PR. This man's head has now become swollen with pride. And as the Bible rightly says, pride cometh before the fall. This man is now on the verge of sending the United States into a devastating defeat, both in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And more than that, much more than that, he is now giving the Iranian mullahs the time that they need, the cover that they need, to now launch their nuclear arsenal and lead the Middle East into a nuclear holocaust. This is him today talking about the success, the supposed success, of those negotiations in Geneva, Switzerland. Boys, roll the clip.
Today in Geneva, the United States, along with our fellow permanent members of the United Nations Security Council, namely Russia, China, France, and the United Kingdom, as well as Germany, held talks with the Islamic Republic of Iran. These meetings came after several months of intense diplomatic effort. Upon taking office, I made it clear that the United States was prepared to join our P5 plus one partners as a full participant in talks with Iran. I extended the offer of meaningful engagement to the Iranian government. I committed the United States to a comprehensive effort to strengthen the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty so that all nations have the right to peaceful nuclear power, provided that they live up to their international obligations.
Well, there you have it. I mean, it's a success. Here we are. We're talking with the mullahs. He reminds me of Nero or Caligula. He really does. Those corrupt Roman emperors who began to believe they were demigods, that they were gods. "I bequeath peace upon the world, and peace it shall be." This is literally what Obama is now thinking. This is what the French fear about him. They are now saying in private, and I'm not talking about low-level officials. These are people very close to President Sarkozy. Sarkozy in private is stunned at the level of hubris and arrogance in this man. He is no longer connected to reality. Because the Iranians can't answer one simple question. And if Obama had half a brain, literally half a brain, he would understand this. Why does a country, explain this to me, why does a country sitting on the second largest natural gas reserves in the world and the third largest oil supply in the world, they are sitting on a mountain of gas and oil, enough to last them for hundreds of years. Why do they need domestic nuclear power? Why are they so obsessed with getting nuclear power? And more than that, let's just say they're crazy. Okay, Jeff, they're crazy mullahs. These people are irrational. Okay? They've eaten too much baklava. So they can't think rationally, Jeff. Okay, fine. Why the hidden facilities? If it's for peaceful nuclear power, why are you hiding them deep underground? Why are you hiding them in tunnels under mountains? As we've just discovered last week. Why the secrecy? Why the deception? Well, it's no secret. The man has said himself, I will bring about the coming of the Muslim Messiah. Ahmadinejad has said this openly. The hidden imam is now coming, and the world will be engulfed, as he put it, in a great fire. And this fire, he believes, is nuclear Armageddon. He believes, in his own sick, twisted mind, that he is now making the world safe for a Muslim empire. This is what we're dealing with. And as this is going on, what is our commander-in-chief doing? I mean, this would almost be funny if the consequences weren't so dangerous. He's off to Copenhagen. He's off to Denmark. There he is, pushing for Chicago, to get the Olympic bid for the 2016 Summer Games. And he sent Michelle, and apparently my sources are telling me this is a matter of pride. This is Rahm Emanuel. This is David Axelrod. All the Chicago gang, all the Chicago boys, they want Chicago to get the Olympics in 2016. So as this country is sinking in an economic recession, as unemployment is soaring over 10%, the stock market is plummeting, as we are now facing a massive government takeover of 1/7 of our economy, as people are being laid off day after day after day, as we are being humiliated on the world stage, he's off to Copenhagen. Well, listen, I don't know. I mean, maybe Copenhagen is nice. I mean, apparently, according to their tourism industry, they now have actresses. I kid you not, I'm not making this up. They have actresses making internet videos saying, women coming out saying, yeah, I just had a baby. I slept with some guy. We both got drunk. I don't know who the father is. If you're the father, can you call me? And this is a big promotional thing for people in Copenhagen. Come down, sleep with our women, get drunk, she'll get pregnant, you can leave. This is our big tourism blitz. This is what we do in Denmark. And this is what our guy is doing. He's off to Copenhagen, pushing for the Olympics. And this is, to me, what really gets under my skin. What is this really about? This is about political payback to the Chicago boys and the Chicago corrupt machine that helped Obama propel himself into power. This is about construction jobs and construction contracts for all the Rod Blagojeviches, all the Bobby Rushes, the David Axelrods, the Rahm Emanuels, all of these guys that helped Obama in his career. And this is why they want the Olympics, because frankly, no sane country would want the Olympics. Athens, Greece lost a ton of money. I know, for example, Montreal had the Olympics in 1976. I'm originally from Montreal, born and raised. Literally, the city only paid off the debt on the 1976 Olympics several years ago. It destroyed the city's finances. It almost bankrupted the city. If you love your city, if you love your country, the last thing you want is a massive public boondoggle like the Olympics. Just literally throwing money, good and bad, into a rat hole. So to me, what's the rush here? Why the desperation? And frankly, I'm rooting. I am rooting for the other three competitors, Tokyo, Rio de Janeiro, and Madrid to get the bid. And I'll tell you why. Rio de Janeiro is in Brazil. It's now led by a radical leftist president. Good. Let them have it. Let them bankrupt themselves. Tokyo now has a new government, an anti-American government. Good, you have it. You want to be against the United States? Good, have that boondoggle on your shoulders. And Madrid, those cowards, those socialists now in power who betrayed us when they abandoned the fight in Iraq and voted in a socialist government. You want the Olympics? You have it. We shouldn't have it. And then today, just today, another teenager has died in Chicago. It is a bloodbath going on there. Did you see the internet video a couple days ago where that poor kid trying to break up a fight in one of these ghettos literally took a plank and got a plank in the head and died from it? Chicago is becoming a giant bloodbath. Gangs have taken over. It is no longer a safe city. What self-respecting IOC, International Olympic Committee, would want if I was a tourist for my own safety? But in the end, this is Obama paying back his Chicago boys. This is about public works projects, construction contracts, a lot of tourism money, advertising. Believe me, a lot of people in Chicago, Obama cronies, are going to fill their pockets with this. This is what this is about. This is not about helping Chicago or about helping America. It's about paying back his political cronies. I want to hear from you. Do you think Obama should be spending his time focusing on getting the Olympics to Chicago? Or does he have maybe, health care, the economy, taxes? Maybe he has other things on his mind that he should be focusing on. Maybe it's just me. I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. Should Obama be in Copenhagen advocating for the Olympics? This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Should Obama be advocating for the Olympics in Copenhagen? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. You know, my friends, apparently even Oprah Winfrey has now gotten into the act. Yep. She's a big supporter of Obama. Obviously, she endorsed him during the election. But she really wants Chicago to get the Olympics. This would be a tremendous coup, she believes, for the city of Chicago. You know, my question to people like Oprah and all the other people in the White House that are pushing for this thing, why would they possibly think that the Olympics would be good for the people of Chicago? You're looking at a city with massive political corruption. Mayors and governors of Illinois who've been put in prison or about to be put in prison. You have a lawlessness on the streets of Chicago where a bunch of thugs and street gangs are literally warring it out, where innocent young boys and girls are being killed every day, sometimes three or four within a 3-4 hour period. There is a massacre going on the streets of Chicago. The city is slowly dying economically. And now they're going to put in this massive public boondoggle, which is just going to bankrupt the city even more, which is just there simply as a way to reward Obama's cronies. Can they not see that, or do they just not care? This is Oprah talking about how Obama is, quote, our team captain, our dear leader. Let's roll it, boys.
He's our team captain.
Yes.
I think, listen, at the end of Barack Obama's address to this group, if we don't get it, we will know that we had the best team captain possible.
Yes. Amen.
We will know that we did the best, that there's nothing else you can do.
Yep, there you have it. There's Oprah Winfrey. I'm telling you, honestly, folks, it's just going to get even worse. More at the bottom of the hour. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
If we get this, the party starts Friday.
This is Jeff Kuhner sitting in for the living legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Should Obama be out shilling for Chicago to get the Olympics in 2016? I want to hear from you, 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Steve from the great city of Chicago. Steve, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Jeff. Washington Park, the center of the Olympics, is within blocks of President Obama's Chicago home. When he was the leader, when he was an elected leader of the area in the Illinois House and Senate, he represented that area. When he was a state, U.S. senator, he represented that area. His political beginnings came from people and businessmen in the area around where the Olympics is going to be held, and they were his first donors. The people who were his donors have used tax dollars to buy up land and homes that they threw out the low-income people from, and now they're vacant, waiting for a billion-dollar project to be manufactured to get the return for all the people that live, that don't live there anymore, but the new, richer places that will be built for them with our tax dollars. And all these friends that donated to his campaign will then fatten their pockets. Should Obama be in Amsterdam, according to his supporters? Absolutely. According to the taxpayers, I think not.
You nailed it, Steve. I mean, that to me was obvious. I mean, weeks ago when there was word leaking out in D.C. that he and his top people, all of them from Chicago, were pushing like mad behind the scenes to have the city get the Olympics in 2016. And this to me is a classic example of political payback. And you're right. His home value is going to shoot through the roof. Those of his friends who've invested in the area, as you said, and kicked out all the poor people. See, I thought the liberals were for poor people. I thought the liberals cared about the little guy. I thought liberals cared about minorities. It's a lie. It's always been a lie. And you know what? For decade after decade, it was the liberals that got minorities addicted to welfare. And welfare, and I'm going to say this carefully, and I'm going to say this exactly knowing the full context of what I'm saying. So I'm not going to, there's no way any liberal can take this out of context. Welfare did more to destroy the black family than even slavery. For all of the abominable evil of slavery, slavery was not able to crush the family unit the way welfare did. It has been a poison on the African American community. It has led to drugs. It has led to illegitimacy. It has led to crime. It has pulverized that community for decade after decade. And the liberals don't give a damn. They never gave a damn. Because deep down, they want them wedded to big government. They want them addicted to big government so they can get votes. And now Obama is going to fill up the pockets of his cronies. This is all political payback for Rahm Emanuel, David Axelrod, Tony Resco, the whole corrupt gang that helped get him into power. This is Chicago criminality now seeping into the White House. Make no mistake about it. So while he's running around in Copenhagen, this is about greasing the palms of his friends back in Chicagoland. And he doesn't give a damn that you're out of a job. He doesn't give a damn that he's bankrupted this country with deficit spending. He doesn't give a damn that day after day, human traffickers, sex traffickers, illegal immigrants are crossing our southern border. He doesn't give a damn about that. What he gives a damn is power. He now believes he is a Roman emperor. And now he is taking care of his mandarins. He is now dispensing the wealth to his supporters. That's what's going on. We are going the way of ancient Rome. Let's go to Douglas in Mississippi. Douglas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good evening, Mr. Kuhner. An honor to speak with you, sir. Pleasure.
Thank you, Doug.
Listen, you say I appreciate your humbleness. I, for one, think you adequately fill Dr. Savage's shoes when necessary.
Oh, thank you, Douglas. I appreciate it. What's on your mind, sir?
I just want to go back a few months, brief history from my humble, personal opinion regarding our president and what I deem to be his shallowness regarding his points of view and how he looks upon everybody else, and I say beneath him. When Gordon Brown came over, he brought us a significantly historical gift. Our so-called president traded with him wrongly formatted CDs, cheap. When the Queen Mum come over, he gave her an iPod full of his speeches, cheap. When he went to visit the sheikh, bowing deeply to him, he received this very large, what I like to call, ghetto chain, cheap. And I think it was completely appropriate that he received such a cheap gift, considering what he has offered to others. Coming forward to today, this week, sending the wife, Oprah, and whoever else he threw on the 727, there's a couple of million dollars in travel expenses to get them over there. Now today, he's going to take the bigger jet, a few more million dollars, to travel over there. All of this just regresses to, I think this man is completely shallow. He is stuck on his own misguided path to whatever he feels is his own personal enrichment for his
Douglas, life. It's even worse than that, my friend. It really is. This man is like a Roman emperor. He is as decadent as a Roman emperor. He's as egotistical as a Roman emperor. And he's as disconnected from reality as a Roman emperor. Look at him. He is now surrounded by the perks and privileges of power that our founding fathers would find utterly repulsive. This is not the American Republic. This is not what founded this country. This country was founded upon citizens, citizen legislators, who would put the good of the country ahead of their own personal private self-interest. This man loves to have yachts. He loves to have planes. He loves to be surrounded by an entourage where everybody tells him he's the greatest thing since Jesus Christ. And so there he is. And, you know, you see him again and again. He has to blow $35, $50, $100,000 to go out on a date to New York City to see a show in Broadway with Michelle. He has to go see the All-Star game. He has to travel back and forth to Copenhagen. And the other thing is this. This to me, and it's the, I mean, I could go on all day about this. The hypocrisy is stunning. These are the very same liberals led by Al Gore. You gotta have different light bulbs. You gotta conserve your energy. Oh, you can't drive your old pickup truck. You know, you guys out in Texas and Wyoming, hang on to your pickup truck because they're gonna take it away from you pretty soon. No, you gotta be in one of those square death traps, these little mini cars, hydrogen fuel powered cars, a Prius or something. That's what they want you in. But for them, for the Roman elite, for the Roman emperor, no, 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 no. He has limos. He has jet airplanes. They're throwing so much CO2 into the atmosphere. I mean, it should be unleashing global warming according to their own logic. That is the hypocrisy of these people. It is stunning. It is shameless. And they are swindling you, the American people. And what they don't see coming, because he is that drunk with power, is not just that his poll numbers are dropping. Forget that. President's poll numbers go up and they go down. It is this. It is the level of intensity, the level of opposition that is now growing in this country. There is now a conservative backlash forming right in front of his very eyes. And he can't see it. He is so blind. He is so infatuated with himself. He so believes he is the next Messiah that he cannot see that he is leading himself, his party, and his country into disaster. And believe me, mark my words on this, Douglas, and to all of you out there in the Savage Nation, come November 2010, it will be a political earthquake that will descend upon Obama and the Democrats. There is now a conservative revolution awakening. The conservative sleeping giant is now finally awake. And it will. We've heard from him, but pretty soon he shall hear from us. And as this is going on, as all of this is going on, this is to me what is stunning. He is in Copenhagen. You have those terrorists right there in New York City who are plotting to destroy some of our key buildings, to commit atrocities even worse than on 9/11. That plot that was recently, thank the Lord, disrupted by law enforcement. You have communist China across the Pacific Ocean now waving the red flag, now saying, the motherland and I, an eye for the motherland. That was their chant today, their fascist communist chant, where they now believe they have the military power and the economic power to now rival and challenge the United States as Obama is bankrupting us. $2 trillion this year alone. he will double and triple the debt in the next 10 years. Nobody can pay that kind of debt. He is bankrupting our children and our grandchildren. It is the Chinese that are buying up our debt. We are now becoming literally an economic colony of China. This is what is happening to us. We are now repeating the mistakes of the Roman Empire. We have lost our will. We have lost our way. We are now obsessed with political games in Washington, with literally putting gifts at the altar of the emperor, with everybody like Oprah saying, he is our team captain. He is our dear leader. The emperor has no clothes. And everybody can see it, but the Democrats and the liberals. Let's go quickly to John in Kentucky. John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, thank you. I want to say that when the Empire State Building needs to be the way it was as far as painted red and yellow, because we need the Empire State Building that stands for freedom and liberty. And I think that Ray Rackey saying we have to buy a Sotero needs to be gone. And also, the book Man in Britain, Ivanka Savage has written, I'd love to have so much. I'd like for it to be on CD for people who are myself or visually impaired.
John, that's a very good point. I'm going to definitely mention that to Michael. I think he definitely should put his book on a CD, listen to his show, because, I mean, frankly, he does a one-act play. I mean, that to me is his great strength. He is one of the most compelling talk radio hosts of our time. There's no getting around it. But no, I mean, the Empire State Building is a very symbol of American liberty. It is the very symbol of American power. And I truly believe, John, having covered the Middle East extensively in my life, having read Middle East and Arabic literature, this to me has been our saving grace, which is that in the Arab mentality, in the Arab culture, they like to target big, major land. By doing this, it takes time to plot something like this. Instead, had they followed this policy, they could have really damaged the United States. Had they attacked shopping malls, had they attacked small businesses, had they would just go on the streets and start bombing themselves up, believe me, with this president in the Oval Office, they could bring America to its knees. So in a sense, it is the Arabs' own ambitions, their ambitious arrogance that is ultimately going to be their downfall. And that's why so far, thank the Lord, we have been able to disrupt every attack. But this just shows we are now in a war to the finish. We are now in a war against America's most deadliest enemies. And unless we get the medal of a leader like Churchill, like Reagan, people that stand for principle and character and dignity and integrity, unless we get that kind of a leader, I sadly believe Western civilization is in trouble. And this is why we conservatives have to never forget this. And I will repeat it twice. We are the last thread of civilization. Let me repeat it. We are the last thread of civilization. We defend God, country, and family. Those are the values that built the West. Those are the values that will sustain the West. Those are the values that will save the West. We need a champion to articulate those values. Because right now, my friends, I don't see anybody on the horizon. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, filling in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Should Obama be shilling for Chicago to receive the 2016 Olympics? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. Lenny in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you, Lenny?
the Olympics will boost the local economy, and I believe that outweighs all the negatives that you mentioned and that I agree with.
How will it boost the local economy, Lenny?
Restaurants will be full. Hotels will be full. Services will be full. Retail trade will be full. There will be construction. And yes, it's true that all the political hacks will get rewarded, and that's unfortunate. But rank-and-file citizens in the greater area and in much of the United States will benefit from it.
Lenny, I hear where you're coming from. That's the argument that's often made by people when they want to advocate for the Olympics. The problem is that over the last 30 to 40 years, that was once true. Olympics were once a profitable venture for any city or country. Over the last 25 to 30 years, Olympics no longer are profitable. Now, you're right. If you own a restaurant or if you own a hotel in Chicago, especially near the area where the Olympics are going to be held, yes, for 2 weeks, you're going to have a real spike in customers and in profits. The problem, however, is the kind of money that has to be spent to build up stadiums, track fields, you name it, is so expensive that it cripples the city and the state with such massive deficits that it literally takes several decades to pay off. That's the problem with everybody arguing for the Olympics. It's a money loser. In the end, you look at every major city over the last 30 years, they have lost money on the Olympics. It is a massive government boondoggle. It is very similar to the argument that Obama's people have made. Well, if you have the $787 billion stimulus, people will get to work. Well, yeah, temporarily, some people will get to work. But the problem is, you are bankrupting yourself with these massive deficits. And these massive deficits in the long run destroy the private sector. They cripple you with debt. And by crippling you with debt, they cripple your economy. This is what's going to happen with the Olympics. Look, somebody like Barack Obama doesn't give a damn about the people of Chicago. If he gave a damn about the people of Chicago, frankly, he would advocate for 100,000 cops being put on the street. He would advocate for a war on drugs to get tough on those pimps and drug dealers that are slowly destroying Chicago. He would get tough on illegal immigration to prevent all those Mexican gangs that have been penetrating Chicago and getting into shootouts with rival minority gangs. But he doesn't care about any of that. This is simply about one thing and one thing only. It is about political power and rewarding his political friends. And you, Lenny, you and all of you out there in the Savage Nation, you're going to be paying for it. You're going to be paying for it for years to come. This man is slowly bankrupting this country. No country can recover from this kind of mountain of debt. This is Chicago-style corruption now coming into the White House. Make no mistake about it. And believe me, Lenny, we'll be paying for it, Savage Nation. Anyway, look, we have a very good show coming up for you on the third hour. You'll want to stick around. You were going to talk about the Tim Pawlenty. Is he now the hero of conservatives and of Republicans? We'll get into that and we'll get into other issues. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael is off today, taking some much-needed time off. He is off, in fact, with his beloved boat, yachting a little bit, taking some much-needed rest time, a little downtime, just to recharge his batteries. But he will definitely be back tomorrow, guns blazing, ready to go. Michael, if you're listening out there, my friend, I want to thank you so much for the incredible, wonderful opportunity to once again fill in for you. Not only does your genius and your wonderful talent on the radio know no bounds, but so does your generosity. And I want to thank you so much for the wonderful opportunity to sit in for you and to speak to your beloved members of the Savage Nation. We've been talking a lot about foreign policy and the Olympics last couple of hours, but there is another major issue that has been quiet for the last few weeks, but is now heating up again. And I believe it will be the defining moment of Obama's presidency. Many people often ask me, Jeff, why is Obama so aloof from foreign policy? Why is it that he will only meet with General McChrystal once in the last 7 days, in the last 70 days, even though our troops are dying in Afghanistan day after day? Why does he have so many envoys? He has envoys for Pakistan. He has envoys for Afghanistan. He has envoys for Iraq. He has envoys for Russia. You name the country, he has an envoy. I bet if he has an envoy for Nigeria, for all I know, or Guinea. I mean, he has an envoy for almost every country on the planet. Why is he outsourcing his foreign policy to everybody in the administration but himself? The reason is a very simple one. At his core, Obama truly believes that foreign policy and crises like in Iran or the crisis in Afghanistan is simply an intrusion upon his little bubble, upon his make-believe world here in the White House. Because for him, all that matters is his domestic agenda. He is focused on one thing and one thing only: to turn America into a European-style social democracy. And at the core of that, at the very heart of that, is his plan to nationalize healthcare. And what he didn't see coming, what has stunned him to his very core, has been the intense reaction over the summer in the town hall meetings and in the Tea Party protests everywhere, opposing this plan to take over 1/7 of our economy. And so now the Democrats are playing the race card from the bottom of the deck. They have now sent out their surrogates, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, Walter Mondale. It runs right down the list, saying that ordinary Americans, hell, many of them elderly people in wheelchairs, many of them over 65, 70, many of them veterans who have fought in America's wars, who are saying loudly and unequivocally, we do not want to destroy and wreck the greatest system of healthcare the world has ever seen. You are going to impose rationing. You are going to have the government run medical care, which is going to reduce all of us literally the level of children. We are going to be dependent upon the government for our very health and well-being. And everywhere this experiment has been tried, from Canada to Sweden to Britain to Germany, it has been a miserable failure. It leads to long lines. It leads to rationed care. And more to me, ominously, and what sickens me, is it leads to the elderly slowly being killed off. It leads to assisted suicide or euthanasia. Because in the end, when you have to ration a system, when you are telling the American people, as Obama is telling the American people, just stand back for a second. Here is what he's claiming. Obama is arguing that we're going to add 30 to 40 million people and give them healthcare coverage. But it's not going to cost us any money. No, in fact, it's going to help lower costs. And more than that, we're going to do it with the same number of doctors and the same number of nurses. But it's not going to lead to rationing. Well, of course it's going to lead to rationing. If you have 30 more million people into the system and you have the same amount of doctors and nurses, they are going to be stretched thin. They're going to be stretched to the breaking point. And that is exactly what has happened in every country that has tried nationalized medicine. I know, because I'm originally from Canada. And as I often say, I am a refugee from the Socialist Republic of Canada. I have been in this country for many years. And one of the reasons why I love America, and I love it to my very heart and soul, to my very core, is this is the land of opportunity. This is the land that a man and a woman can stake their, put their stake in the ground and make something of themselves and not have the government crush them and obstruct them and block them at every turn. It's not like that in Canada, and it's not like that in Europe. You go to Canada, you have a simple cold or a flu, you have to wait 8 to 9 hours before you see your doctor. I know. I would make an appointment for 8:30 in the morning. I was lucky to see my doctor by 5:30. But God forbid you should get a serious illness like my mother, who got stricken with pancreatic cancer, or my grandmother, who suffered from a massive heart attack. My grandmother didn't even get treatment because when we brought her in, the doctors and nurses told us, Mr. Cooner, we're sorry. We are overstretched. We don't have the staff or the manpower to take care of your grandmother. So she was left on a gurney in the hallway of the hospital for 3 days and three nights with myself and my father and her other family members to take care of her. Nobody even came to see her. And then she eventually died. This is socialized medicine. And rather than confront this reality, the Democrats have to come out and say, you're a racist. They have to come out and browbeat you. Well, now that backfired because it's obvious to any normal, sane person that, well, hold on, I'm just opposed to socialized medicine. Where did race come into all of this? This is a cheap political tactic to muzzle and silence the opposition. So now they've tried a different tactic. Now we have Congressman Alan Grayson. You got to check out this clown, Florida Democrat. He had to come out and say that Republican health care leads to the death of thousands of Americans every year, that Republican health care leads people to die quickly. Remember, these are the same Democrats that practically crucified Congressman Joe Wilson when he called Obama a liar, which, by the way, he was right to have called Obama a liar, because in the end, Obama will give amnesty to illegal immigrants and they will get health care. So he wasn't lying. And in fact, if Wilson wasn't like most Republicans, if he actually had a spine and stood up to the liberal media and said, no, I was right to call the president a liar, he would actually have my support. But instead, like many turncoat Republicans, at the first sign of pressure or trouble, he runs and he flees. But let that go. You have Alan Grayson. Nobody's censoring him. So now he has to apologize. But there's no censor in Congress. No, they haven't censored him in Congress. No, we can't do that. Now, if you can believe it, this guy's unbelievable. This guy should get his own late night TV show. I swear to you. This guy now comes out and says that it's important for everybody in the Senate to come together so that you can end this Holocaust in America. The fact that some people don't have health insurance is a Holocaust in America. Can you imagine that? Boys, let's just quickly play the tape. Go.
Now, I think we should do something about that. And the Democratic health care plan does do something about that. It makes health care affordable for those who can't afford insurance, and it saves these people's lives. Let's remember that we should care about people even after they're born. So I call upon the Democratic members of the House, I call upon the Republican members of the House, I call upon all of us to do our jobs for the sake of America, for the sake of those dying people and their families. I apologize to the dead and their families that we haven't voted sooner to end this Holocaust in America.
Yep, to end this Holocaust in America. Congressman Grayson, have you no shame? Have you absolutely no shame, sir? This kind of pathetic fear-mongering? This kind of attempt to scare the people, to bludgeon the people into supporting a pathetic, bankrupt, ineffective healthcare system? So we're not racists, but now we're murderers? Now we're like the Nazis? And just to show you how we've sickened the term Holocaust, how we've so perverted it and twisted it, This was a program by people who claimed racial Aryan supremacy to systematically murder 6 million Jews in concentration camps and gas ovens. Think about that. Think about that. That's what the Holocaust was. This guy is going on and saying, because some people don't want to pay for their health insurance, or what is more often the case, it is illegal immigrants who come into this country who shouldn't even be here, and suddenly they're put into the category of being uninsured. Suddenly now he's claiming there's blood on the streets, there's a Holocaust going on. What planet is this guy living on? I seriously ask myself, what planet is this guy living on? Are you that desperate? Are you that afraid of the facts? Are you that afraid of the truth that you now have to lie and fearmonger your way to convince the American people to embrace something that has been a disaster wherever it's been tried? Everywhere it's been tried, it's been a disaster. This is an argument the Democrats cannot confront. They cannot address this central issue. Show me one country, one, where socialized medicine has worked. In fact, you talk about a Holocaust. How about all those old people in Canada and in the Netherlands and in Germany and in Sweden and in Britain who are, 57, 58, or 59 and have, I don't know, diabetes or have stricken with some kind of cancer or, God forbid, have heart disease? They're told, well, that's too bad. Sorry. We have to take care of the more productive younger people of the population, the more younger members of the population. Too bad. Suffer. Bear with it. And their lives are tragically cut short. You won't speak up for them. And all of a sudden, did you notice, Grayson? We have to care about people after they're born. Oh, suddenly now you care about people after they're born. Because I'll tell you this, Congressman Grayson, you and the Liberal Democrats certainly don't care about people before they're born. That I guarantee you. When it comes to killing the innocent unborn, there's nobody better than you guys. You guys have unleashed a true Holocaust. And that is 50 million dead from abortion in this country. That is the blood that is on your hands. And now you have the gall, you have the stomach to stand there, the face to tell us, because we want to preserve the greatest healthcare system in the world, that somehow we are murderers? Shame on you, sir. Shame on you. Keep talking, because the more you talk, the more opposition you're going to galvanize. Your days are numbered. And the Democrats' days are numbered. The American people have seen you for what you are, a bunch of phony con men who are running this country into the ground. You have spoken, but pretty soon you shall hear from us. Do you believe that Congressman Grayson should be censored for calling this a Holocaust? Do you believe that this scare tactic by the Democrats to ram nationalized health care is going to work? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255, 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Do you think Congressman Alan Grayson should be censured by his colleagues for comparing American healthcare to the Holocaust, saying those that have not been given insurance are basically dying because of lack of care, and there is now basically a Holocaust being unleashed on our streets? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Joe in Indiana. Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for having me on. I am appalled that this gentleman would dare to compare our state of our healthcare system to a Holocaust. I wholeheartedly agree he should be censured, dare to say removed from Congress for this comment. It clearly shows where his priorities are, and much less the priorities of the Democratic Party.
Well,
just wanted to make that comment. I want to say I agree.
Okay, Joe, I'll be very frank. I don't approve of censure, and I'll tell you why I don't approve of censure. I didn't approve of Joe Wilson being censured, and I don't approve of this clown being censured. I think it is now up to the representatives of his district. If they want this kind of a moron representing them, who clearly cannot comprehend what the Holocaust was and who clearly does not understand the healthcare system in this country, and more than that, clearly cannot understand what has been done in the name of government-run healthcare all over the world, if they want that kind of a clown who is literally so disconnected from reality that he is embarrassing himself and his party, that's their problem. But to those in his district, they should vote against him in the next election. That's what elections are for. I do not like this idea of everybody being censured because they say something that is deemed offensive or outrageous. Joe Wilson was right to have called Barack Hussein Obama a liar. He was right, because Obama is planning to pass amnesty. He said so 2 weeks ago to the Hispanic Congressional Caucus, and he explicitly said, once we pass amnesty, every one of those illegal immigrants will be entitled to government-run health care. They will be part of the system. So Wilson was right. Why should he apologize? We'll have more. This is Jeff Cooner filling in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. The number to call is 1-800-449-8255. Should Congressman Alan Grayson be censured for comparing our healthcare system to the Holocaust? I want to hear from you. Let's go to Suzette in Orlando. Suzette, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I live in Congressman Grayson's District 8 in Orlando, and I agree with you that he should not be censured for the reasons that you gave, and also because the more attention that it brings to him, then it's more of a publicity ploy to send more money to his campaign. So I think we should just count down the days. And then you also mentioned that it should be up to us to vote him out, and I'll have you know, I work very closely with the Orlando Tea Party, and today at 12 noon, we rolled out the carpet, we should say, for the first person who has publicly come out and said that they will run against Congressman Grayson in 2010. So we're ready to roll.
God bless you, Suzette. Believe me, this guy is ripe for a fall. He deserves to be taken down. He's an embarrassment to Congress. He's an embarrassment to the people of Florida. And he's an embarrassment to this nation. Look, what I think he said was, it was not only vile, it was stupid. I mean, it's just stupid. You know, he reminds me, I mean, I have people like that in my family. I mean, I have in-laws, you know, that stupid in-law, you know, a stupid brother-in-law that just comes over for dinner and just shoots his mouth off and says the most outrageous, stupid things. He would say something like that. Oh, there's a Holocaust going on in the streets of America. There's not enough health care for everybody. Oh, please. You know, honestly, put a sock in it. You know, and so, you know, he's an embarrassment. He truly is an embarrassment. But I'm uncomfortable with people getting censured for this simple reason. Look at what I've been talking about and all of my appearances on Savage and what Savage has been defending, namely freedom of speech, freedom of expression. I don't like freedom of speech and freedom of expression being violated or muzzled in any way, shape, or form. This is something that, frankly, the Europeans do. This is what the British are good at. This is what the French are good at. This is what the Germans are good at. Look, my grandfather, God bless his soul, spent a year and a half in a Nazi concentration camp. Half of his family were murdered and wiped out by the Nazis. I loathe Hitler and the Holocaust to my very core, to the very fiber of my being. Yet I am disgusted by the laws in Austria and Germany that put you in prison because you deny the Holocaust. If you want to be a sick, twisted psychopath who believes that the Holocaust never happened, if you want to be Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in Iran, hell, you could, you know what, if you're a crazy psychopath, you can run your own country in the Middle East. frankly. I would say go to Iran or go to one of these nutcase thug states in the Middle East, Egypt. You can take your pick, the Palestinian territories. Holocaust denial is very big down there. I would say go down there and run your own country. But what you don't do is you don't throw these people in jail. You don't censor them. You don't violate their freedom of speech, because this is the point. What liberals used to believe about 100 years ago was, I may disagree with what you say, but I will fight to the death for your right to say it. This is the essence of a free society. This is why I believe that the Constitution is the greatest document the world has ever seen. And it's something that we Americans take for granted. The First Amendment, freedom of religion, freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, freedom of speech. Those are values that are trampled and destroyed almost everywhere around the world. So a guy like Grayson should face his constituents head on. And he should be held accountable for his remarks and say, you know what? If you're that stupid, and if you're that kind of a clown, and if you're that disconnected from reality, this is not even a left-right issue. This is not even a Democrat-Republican issue. You're an embarrassment. You're an embarrassment to the 6 million Jews that were murdered, and you're an embarrassment to the people of this country. Because if you can't see that we have the greatest healthcare system in the world, and if you can't see that nationalized and socialized medicine, everywhere it's gone, has destroyed economies and destroyed healthcare systems, then you're blind, you're stupid, you're beyond stupid, and it's time for you to go. And so, my friends, this is what we're faced with now. Censorship is alive and well everywhere. Savage is now facing it in Britain. If you say anything critical of radical Islam, whether it be in Holland or whether it be in Belgium or Germany, you can be put to prison or you can lose your job. Just today, this is what horrifies me. One of the greatest countries, or rather the most wicked countries, that censors freedom of speech, that has one of the most brutal police states, is communist China. They don't just kill you if you speak out against the government or criticize communism. Under Mao, there was cannibalism. They ate you. They eat you. That's how bad that regime was and is. Our empire state building was lit up today. Literally, they lit it up in memorial and in honor of communist China's 60th anniversary. Candles were lit. Lights were lit. They do that for New Year's or Christmas or very special occasions. This is what we've been reduced to in this country. We are literally placating and appeasing not only our worst enemies, but countries that go against our very values and freedoms. Countries that violate our most cherished principles at the drop of a hat. This is what we're now celebrating. This is what we have now been reduced to. I don't say this lightly. I say this with a very sad heart. We are now going the way of ancient Rome. We have forgotten our republican principles. We have become decadent and self-indulgent. We have literally lost our way. And this is, to me, the meaning of the Obama presidency. It has crystallized like nothing else, that we have lost our way. We have now turned our back on our founding principles. And this is why, Suzette, people like you and people of the Savage Nation, we now represent the conservative resurgence. We now represent the American ideals and the American values, here and no further. We will not allow our country to die slowly and to go silently into the good night. If we shall go down, we will go down with our heads held high. We will go down and fight for our cherished principles as our forefathers did before us. We will go down, not with a whimper, but with a bang. This is what you're hearing across America. And I believe that the conservative hour may be back. People wrote us off a little bit too prematurely. Conservatism is back. And led by people like Savage and Conservative Talk Radio, we have lost our country, but I believe we can take it back. Let's quickly go to Bruce in Orlando. Bruce, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks. Glad to talk to you. People have a very, very short memory, so let Grayson keep talking, because he's bound to say five or six more stupid things before we vote him out of office. There's no way. I let him talk,
it'll generate huge, huge Republican turnouts at the polls. Thanks, man.
Bruce, no, you're right. Let them keep talking. Let the Democrats keep talking. The more they talk, the more they open, the more they flap their mouths, as you can tell by the poll numbers and by the reaction among ordinary Americans, the more trouble they get themselves into. But you know what to me is very important about Grayson's comment? It gives you a window. It gives you an insight into what the Democrats truly think about this country. They truly hate this country. In their heart of hearts, they truly believe this is a racist, sexist, homophobic, evil country. Some people don't have health care. That's a Holocaust. You oppose Obama? You must be racist. All you Southerners out there, you're all racist. They have been trying to destroy white America now for decades. Look, you look at our school children. I know because I talk to high school kids all the time. You know, it's amazing about our public education system. They don't know how to read. They don't know how to write. They don't know how to do math. They know two things. They know how to put a condom on a cucumber. Oh, that they have down to a science. They know how to have lesbian sex, homosexual sex. They know how to inject a heroin needle into their veins. That they have to a science. And they have this, the one idea that comes in their head. We are a racist, imperialist, homophobic, evil society. That's all they know. We had slavery. We killed Indians. We oppressed minorities. That's America. Well, no. If you even read half a textbook, you would know. This country from its founding was the most progressive, democratic, freedom-loving country in the history of the world. When our forefathers, when our founding fathers fired that shot that started the American Revolution, we told the entire world, which was then dominated by monarchies, by kings, here we will have a self-governing republic. Here the people will decide who their leaders are, not the government. This is what healthcare is about, my friends. It is more than just what's an effective healthcare system. It's even more than about the quality of care for you and your family. It's even more fundamental than that. It's about the relationship of the citizen to the government. What is that relationship? Are you responsible to the government, or is the government responsible to you? Do you own the government, or does the government own you? And what nationalized healthcare is, it is the final pillar of the welfare state. It is the final pillar in the triumph of socialism. It is the Democrats saying, we own you. You are no longer a citizen. You are a serf. You belong to the government, so much so you can't even choose your own health care, which is the most basic thing you have. That's what this debate is about. It is about freedom. It is about liberty. It is about who we are as Americans. Let's quickly take another call. Let's go to Tim in New Hampshire. Tim, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, great job tonight, Jeff. Great job.
Thank you, Tim.
I would like to know, whatever happened to the saying that you just reiterated on the radio a moment ago, I may not agree with what you say, but I will defend with my life your right to say it. It seems like the attitude has changed in the past 30 or 40 years, maybe less, that if I don't agree with what you say, you don't have a right to say it. And I don't think that's the principles this country was founded on. I think that if the current administration wants to focus on change, yes, we can change. Let's change, but let's change for the better. Let's change to get something that we have lost, and that is the idea that other people have a right to express an opinion, because when opinions get crushed, so does the will of the peoples who
well, everything, Tim, everything gets crushed. You lose freedom of expression. You lose freedom of speech. You essentially have given up your democracy. And this is why, look, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but this is why I am, to me, stunned and appalled that the media, the mainstream media, but especially the conservative media, because it is conservatives that face the fairness doctrine. It is conservatives that are smeared and libeled and slandered every day. Why they have not come to the defense of Savage? Because this is an international case. This is one of the greatest cases of our time. Here you have a man who has been put on a blacklist and banned from a country, a democracy. This is Great Britain. This is the mother of Parliament. We descended from the British. We were a colony of the British. Britain has given us America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, Israel, India. Many of the world's democracies spawned and came from Britain. What has happened to you? Are you that afraid of freedom of speech? Are you that afraid of ideas that you need to ban and blacklist this man and put him beside terrorists? This, to me, is the currency that we as conservatives and talk radio hosts deal in, freedom of expression. If that cannot be protected, then nothing can be protected. And so I have to tell you, Tim, I'll be very frank with all of you out there in the Savage Nation. Every time I do a fill-in for Savage, I will get an email from a key producer of one of his main rivals. And here's what they will say. But Savage has insulted us. Savage has attacked one of our hosts. How do you expect us to defend him? What comes around goes around. And here is my answer. I'm not asking you to spend every minute of your show defending him. I'm not asking you to beat the drums of war on his behalf. But you mean to tell me you can't spend, 2 minutes on the air making your listeners aware of it? Because freedom of speech is an issue that transcends personality conflicts. I don't care, and I say this honestly and forthrightly to all of you, if Michael never has me on the air again, if Michael calls my mother a whore and a prostitute, okay? I don't care. I will still defend his right to not be banned in Britain, because when they come for Savage, they will not stop there. It is the beginning. They will come for all of us. And my freedom is worth more than a petty personal quarrel. And this is why I have challenged every major conservative talk show host. Shame on you. Your silence is deafening. Your silence speaks of your cowardice. It is now time to stand up and be counted. Who is man enough or woman enough to be counted? That is the question. I am Jeff Cooner, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. Savage. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. The hour just blew by, my friends in the Savage Nation. What can I say? It's always a tremendous pleasure to be speaking to all of you. I encourage all of you, go to michaelsavage.com. There are some wonderful stories up about what is happening. Most importantly, if you can, if you have the time, I urge all of you, sign the petition that Michael will eventually deliver to members of Congress demanding that the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, along with the State Department, pressure the British government to repeal the ban on Michael Savage, to take him off the blacklist. This is not about an individual. This is not about a conservative talk show personality. This is about freedom of speech and freedom of expression. This is about our most sacred rights as Americans. And we now have to make a stand. And what you are now seeing with Michael is part of a larger force that has been attacking and eroding democracy all across Western civilization. I was to Europe, and I was shocked and amazed not only at the swelling immigrant Muslim populations that are appearing everywhere, which are transforming Europe into Eurabia, but the cowardice, the fear, the uncertainty of many people in the media elite in every one of those countries who have are telling me off the record, Jeff, we are now afraid for our very lives. If we criticize the Prophet Muhammad, if we criticize the Palestinians, if we criticize the Iranian mullahs, if we are seen as hostile to radical Islam, we are afraid of death threats. We are slowly losing freedom of the press in this country. We who in Europe gave you the Renaissance, gave you the Enlightenment, gave you the printing press. We who spawned Western civilization, which led to America and the New World, we are now crumbling from within. We are losing our most sacred freedoms. We are now defenseless against this ideological onslaught. This is why what they are trying to do against Savage is so wrong. And this is why I will repeat it once again to all of my member fellow friends in the media, especially in the conservative media. Now is the time to stand up and be counted. Now is the time to put aside petty egos and petty rivalries. This is not about who said what to whom. This is about your very livelihood, about your very rights, about your ability to express your views on the air, uncensored and unfiltered. Savage is fighting the good fight, and we need to back him. This is Jeff Cooner, filling in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.